use our website, kpft.org. And while you're there, listen in.
This is 90.1 KPFT FM and FM HD1 Houston, with translators at 89.5 FM K208DG Galveston and 91.9 FM K220KC Huntsville. Houston's community station, 90.1 KPFT, a Pacifica radio station.
It is 5 p.m. Thursday, time for So What's Your Story, the only program originating in Houston devoted to storytelling, and you're going to find it only here on Houston's community station, listener-sponsored KPFT. I am Hank Rubicek, producer and tonight's host, and every week, along with the glittering crew, we celebrate the power of story by placing the spotlight on tellers who take us on journeys through windows of their souls. Well, you know, our spring fun drive continues. I know what you're thinking. Again, always. Yeah, it pretty much seems that way, I know. Well, that's the magic and the frustration that comes with supporting a station that relies entirely on listener sponsorship. We are asking you to endorse two things: the power of listener-centered corporate-free radio and the eclectic program inventory that comes with it. Programs as diverse as the city it represents. So please support us by calling 713-526-5738, jam KPFT with your pledges, or by going online at www.kpft.org, then go to donations, select a form of payment as long as it's not my credit card, and scroll to So What's Your Story as a show that you would like to support, and we'll love you for life. You know, we must be doing something right, because this award-winning show, So What's Your Story, is really an icon in community radio, where we showcase ordinary people with extraordinary stories to tell. We're the only show that does it, and we've been doing it since 2008. Now, in 2014, I became smart enough to know that I can no longer do this show alone. So I gathered a team of ridiculously talented people in the likes of Warren Holloman, Greg Audell, and Mary Edgerton. And currently, Mary Edgerton, Dr. E, Eric Heen, and Larry Thompson continue to make up the best team on radio. In short, So What's Your Story is the center of Thursday's KPFT Power Hour, thanks to you. Now, tonight, I've got some storytellers who will be lying through their teeth, sort of. Dean Keith and Warren Holloman are recent winners of the Houston Storytellers Guild Lying Contest. I guess you can say they're the best liars in the state. Now, this is an annual event that not only displays some of the best tellers, but the most innovative creators of the tall tale. Tales about them. Now, what makes these stories special is their uncanny fusion of fibbing, fabrication, and curious plausibility. Entertaining stuff, so grab some popcorn. You know, Dean, Warren, wanted to talk a little bit about the whole idea of lying, and we're going to get to how you guys craft your lies first. But Dean, let's start with you. You've been a storyteller for a while. You are a person who I consider to be professionally ambidextrous, who can tell a story and help us look really good telling it. As the tech person for the Tejas Storytelling Association, Dean not only framed every participant in the best possible way during our last festival, but he's one of those few rare folks who understand how technology can enhance rather than hinder a teller's performance. He may not realize it, but he's one of the very few experts in digital telling. Why is he rare? Because he's only a few years over 21, like the rest of us. No millennial there. Dean is one of those old guys who just knows what he's doing. Dean is also an active member of the North 40 Storytelling Guild in Plano, Texas. Dean, tell us about the North 40 Guild in Plano. A little bit about the history. How long have you been around?
Oh, hey, Hank. Good to be on your show. Yeah, so North 40 was started in 1993 by a lady named Gwen Caldwell, and she is still an active professional storyteller. At that time, it was called the Richardson Plano Storytelling Guild. But several years ago, the name changed to North 40 Storytellers, which is also our website, north40storytellers.com.
Right. And when do you guys meet? When's your guild swaps?
We meet at a place called the Heritage Farmstead. And this is an area that's in Plano that was once an actual farm from back in the early 1900s. So they've tried to maintain the buildings, and they still have animals there, and they have a lot of events that goes on. And we sometimes tell at some of those events, so they provide the space that we meet there monthly, third Monday of every month, to kind of share stories, learn stories, practice stories, and just all the great things that a guild can do.
Great. And I've got the website, Dean, but do me a favor after the show and email it to me. So I'm going to put it on our Facebook page so people can join you, right?
Sure. No problem.
We're going to get people involved. Absolutely. Tough question, Dean, but what was the best story that you ever told? You know, you tell stories at the guild. You've been telling stories a while at various festivals and platforms. What was the best story you ever told?
I think it's the ones, and there's sometimes more than one, where people come up to me later and say, did that really happen? Mm-hmm. Then I know I had a good story.
There you go. Great. And I love that because plausibility really is an important variable, isn't it? We want to listen to a good lie, a good tall tale, and say, I don't think it's true, but, you know, that one part that he was saying, I don't know. Is there anything that we need to know before you deliver your lie?
Well, just to say that this is a family story that we call the Midnight Hour.
The Midnight Hour. All right. Tell us your story.
Okay, so Uncle Bob. Now, Uncle Bob is my Uncle Bob. He is my dad's older brother. And Uncle Bob suddenly found himself wide awake. He glanced over at the clock. It said 2:22, which he thought was interesting, that the numbers all aligned like that. But then he got to thinking, well, why am I awake? Now, they'd been in this rental house off the west coast of Florida for about 2 weeks. They'd rented it for a month kind of to have a good time away. And so he was already used to the bed and the pillows and all the kind of the sounds from being in a new environment like that. But there wasn't any reason that he could think of that he would suddenly be awake. Now, it's not that Uncle Bob didn't get up at night and go to the bathroom, and he thought a minute and said, no, that's not what's going on. And so now he's starting to think, well, was there a thunderstorm that's coming? Is there some unusual noise? Is there an animal prowling around outside? What could it be? What could it be? And nothing hit him. And then suddenly it did hit him. He couldn't hear Aunt Helen breathing. Now, Aunt Helen was not a snorer. It's just that, like any person, when they're sleeping, we'll have this kind of breathing sound, and he didn't hear anything. And he thought, oh, well, it's no big deal, and he just kind of rolled over, but it just kept preying on his mind, and he's thinking, maybe that's why I woke up. Maybe Helen's in some kind of distress. And the more he got thinking about it, the more concerned he got. Now, the other thing about Aunt Helen is that she does not like to be awakened at night, because if you do wake her up, she suddenly is like, what's something wrong with the kids? And of course, you know, she just gets, all upset. And then, no, it's just, well, you just don't do it, because now she can't go back to sleep and she's grumpy all the next day. And so he's lying there thinking, is there something wrong with Helen? What? I don't want to wake her up because it'll make her mad. And so he's just kind of going through this eternal debate. And he actually even puts his hand over her face without touching her, and he doesn't feel anything. So now he's just, as he's thinking more about it, and it gets worse and worse and worse. And what he's imagining this happened, she's had a heart attack, she's had a stroke, and I can probably save her. And that's why I woke up. And so he throws the covers off and he straddles Aunt Helen, he starts slapping her face. He's going, Helen, please don't be dead. Helen wakes up and punches him right in the face. And he rolls off for her and stops over to the bed, on the end of the bed with his feet on the floor. And she sits straight up in bed and, "What in the world are you doing?" And as soon as she takes a breath in, he says,
"I thought you were dead."
Well, that stunned Aunt Helen into silence for about 2 seconds. And then we're going to fast forward now a little bit in this story because, well, Helen says some things that might have been partially true and definitely some things that she didn't really mean to say. And if she thought about it later, she would regret saying them. So we're going to fast forward till we get to the point in which she says, "I'm going to the bathroom." And she gets out of bed and she strides off into the bathroom. Uncle Bob is sitting on the end of the bed. He's holding his face, trying to imagine and think through, what did I do wrong? When he hears Aunt Helen scream. Now, this is not just any scream. This is the scream that any human being who's sitting on the toilet and the frog that somehow made its way into the toilet senses a change in its environment and decides that it needs to leap straight up and out to change where it is. That is the scream that Uncle Bob hears. Now, when he hears this scream, immediately his adrenal gland floods his body with a large dose of adrenaline. At the same time, Aunt Helen's adrenal gland has done the same thing, but her body's response is flight, where Uncle Bob's response is fight. And so the two of them collide like two crash dummies in some weird Consumer Reports experiment, such that Aunt Helen's right big toe, painted hot pink, I might throw in, stabs into, like a lumberjack's axe, into his left shin bone. And in the process, that toe bends 90 degrees up and backwards, way beyond design limits. And so now she is hopping up and down, yelling, "It's in the toilet, it's in the toilet." Meanwhile, Uncle Bob is now jumping up and down on his other foot because his shin bone is just sending up lightning bolts of pain up into his brain. And he's trying to decide what he should do now. His face is throbbing. His shin is aching and sharp pain shooting up his leg. Should he help Aunt Helen over to the bed, or should he go in and follow her direction about it's in the toilet? He decides to go into the bathroom, which he does. Closes the door behind him. Now, at this point, my dad says, and this begins Bob's battle, biblical battle in the bathroom. Biblical because of the frog and, you know, plagues of Egypt. Well, of course, Uncle Bob did not know that there was a frog in the toilet. All he knew was that the lid of the toilet every few seconds would just pop up with a thump, drop down with a bang, and then there'd be a splash. So it was thump, bang, splash. And he's watching this happen, and every horror movie that Uncle Bob has ever seen comes flooding through his brain. But logic kind of takes its hold, and instead of running away, he thinks, you know, if it's not strong enough to push that lid up, it might be something that I can dominate. So he grabs a towel, and he goes over and he puts the towel over the lid of the toilet and then slowly lifts the lid up. Well, Bob later described that this was a vicious sewer pipe frog. And this frog came out of that toilet and started bouncing and jumping all around the room. And vicious meaning that as soon as it got behind Bob, it would jump up on his head, and with his hind legs, it would slap his head for a couple of things and then jump off. At one point, it even jumped off, landed on the shower curtain, climbed up onto the shower rod, ran across it, and leaped right onto his face and started slapping the side of his face, which was already still throbbing from being punched in it. And so, meanwhile, Aunt Helen is sitting on the bed, not having a clue of what's going on, other than hearing banging and bobbing and crashing as Uncle Bob is just cursing to the extent of his curse knowledge as he is trying to control this frog, which he has no clue. But suddenly the stops and Bob comes out with something all wrapped up in a towel. And that something is just bouncing around inside this towel like it's trying to get out. Uncle Bob says, "It's a frog." Aunt Helen says, "A frog?" Uncle Bob doesn't want to hear it. He goes outside the front door. He lets the frog go. Later, he said the frog took a couple of leaps into the bushes, and he heard a couple of croaks after that that sounded pretty ominous to him. He came back in, threw the towel over into the laundry room, and went back in and climbed into bed with no intention of explaining what was going on. Pulled the covers over him and rolled over. Aunt Helen decided that, well, not going to get anything more out of him tonight. So she goes in to complete her bathroom activity. She goes in, looks in the toilet, flushes it once, wait a few seconds, flushes it again, finally uses the toilet, comes back out, gets back into bed. And as she's lying there thinking about it, she's getting more and more angry because she is awake. Her toe is still aching. And apparently Bob is asleep and she's getting more and more mad. And then all of a sudden it hits her. I don't think Bob's breathing. And that's the story of the midnight hour.
I love that. Warren, what's your impressions of Dean's prevarication?
I loved it. I found myself identifying with it, which sounds a little strange because we usually don't have frogs coming up out of our toilet. But it was more the way he eased into that by talking about something that is a very familiar situation. If you've been married to someone for a while and lying awake at night, listening to them breathe, and then something changes and you just, your imagination runs wild in the middle of the night with what could be wrong, and your fears creep in of the worst, and then something crazy happens because you wake her up to see if she's okay, but now she's not okay because you woke her up. So there was being able to identify, but there was also this, the trajectory, the way he eased me into the tall tale with beginning with something that sounded very familiar and factual. So when he got to the frogs, it just was a little more believable because everything else had been believable. There'd been so much detail and it made it seem so real.
You know, it struck me a little bit earlier when Dean was talking about, you know, lies and truth, and sometimes you really can't tell the difference. And this is an example of one. There's an awful lot of wonderful things in this story that are very plausible. Warren, you know the story that I used to tell about being a negotiator in Washington. And Dean, it's a story that I was a negotiator and I went to a little mom and pop place, and I'm putting one foot in front of the other, and I'm opening a door and there's a guy with a gun. And when people hear that story, they go, "Come on, give me a break." And of course, it's dead true. And then I tell another story about learning to be a good salesperson because I was a stutterer and I sold Bibles. And the reason I sold so many Bibles is that I was able to go to a front door and say, this Bible is 3,692 pages. You want to buy it, or you want me to read it to you? Of course, people hear that story and they go, "Oh my God, I can't believe you did that." I say, "I didn't." So the point is that sometimes lies and truth really do blend awfully well. Your story, I think, does that so well, and so does Warren's, as we're going to find out in just a minute. Another goal of tonight's show is to really encourage all of our listeners to really get into the world of storytelling by telling stories and supporting shows like this one So storytellers really have a platform for telling their tales. Sometimes they just don't. So what's your story? Over 600 storytellers have delivered stories about everything from meeting your father for the first time to a jaw-dropping tale of a daughter's murder told by a mother smothered in grief. I'll never forget that night. People tell stories about good dates, bad proms, joy and jubilation, painful lows. Sometimes they'll tell stories. I remember one story about a prisoner learning that he was acquitted and off death row and heard that story. And it was just amazing. Memorable moments frozen in time and ready to thaw in story form, along with the great stories tonight. This is what our city is paying for. And we want you to know that, because when you call 713-526-5738, we need you to know what the product is. So please, your donations would be so greatly appreciated. This is Hank Rubicek, and you are listening to So What's Your Story with my guest storytellers, Dean Keith and Warren Holloman, only on Houston's community station, KPFT 90.1 FM, 89.5 in Galveston, and 91.9 in Huntsville. You know, folks, your donations don't just mean something, they mean everything. We are corporate free, and your pledges promise that this station, Houston's community station, will stay a part of this city's landscape. A Pacifica affiliate, KPFT's mission is to maintain an open and trusting relationship with the people of Houston and its broadcast vicinity. Programmers, for your information, are never paid for their efforts. And what looms doubly large is that we are now producing shows at home because KPFT remains homeless for now. But you don't tune in and say, what do you expect? It's a terrible show, but these guys aren't paid. Uh-uh. You want excellence. And that is exactly what we give you. You expect quality shows, the kind that enrich your life. But we need your help, so I'm asking you to please call 713-526-5738 with your donations. Or if you prefer, you don't like the phone, go to www.kpft.org and go to donations and give us whatever you can. Listen, I want all of you to know that I know the times are very difficult. None of us are naive. If this is not a good time to pledge, then do me a favor. Don't worry about it. That simple. Just tune in every week, and when things get a little bit better, well, you're going to help with the donations then. In the meantime, just tune in every week, enjoy what you hear, and that's all we ask. This show brought storytelling to Houston, and since being on the air, Houston has become a center for storytelling. Let me tell you why. For example, our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild, is a terrific place to tell stories and meet the nicest people around. They meet virtually the fourth Tuesday of the month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. The next swap is May 24th. So visit their website at www.houstonstorytellers.org for the Zoom link to that swap and all of their story swaps. And also check out the Tejas Storytelling Association, or take your skill to the next level and become a member of the National Storytelling Network. Our friends at the Moth are packing them into Warehouse Live the second Tuesday of the month, celebrating a theme-centered story night that you're not going to forget. Oh, and please be sure to visit our So What's Your Story at facebook.com/SoWhat'sYourStory. And if you've got any suggestions for guests, please text me, Dr. Hank, with your ideas at 832-277-1581. That's 832-277-1581. Now, for fun, I want to introduce my next guest with sort of a mix of truth and nonsense. See if we can get away with it. Retired MD Anderson professor Warren Holloman and I have been friends for some time. He's a past co-host on this show. So far, everything's true. Until the FBI raided the studio and took him away. Really? Kind of wondering. Well, Warren grew up on a tobacco road in eastern North Carolina, that's true. And now he resides, get ready, at Central Prison in Raleigh. He is incarcerated they're courtesy of North Carolina's so-called bathroom bill, which makes it a felony for a man to use the ladies' restroom. Oh, stop. But when Warren heard that the Texas legislature was considering a bathroom bill similar to the North Carolina law, he offered his story as a cautionary tale for all of us Texans. How kind of him. Well, tonight, Warren zooms in from his prison cell in the Johnson unit of Central Prison. It's always funny when I'm reading this because right now I'm in a closet in the back of our bathroom to get a better sound for the show. So who knows if he's in the prison? We do the strangest things in radio. Warren, this is really important. Warren's accent is designed to poke fun at the people who surrounded him growing up. He's not picking on any of you. We all know the Texans can't talk. We all know you say things like good rather than good. People in Boston never use the letter R, pakika. So what he's going to say really isn't that terribly unusual, but he's poking fun at his people. So the accent that you're going to hear is the way he actually spoke in his earlier life. Warren, do us a favor. Just jump into your story.
Well, I'm going to tell you about the very last time I went possum hunting with my dog All Night Long. That was his name, All Night Long. We was down there in the woods long about midnight, and up come this storm. So we hightailed it back to the truck, and it's a good thing we did, because that storm hit just about the same time we got there. Well, we headed back up the dirt road, and we turned onto the gravel road, and eventually we made our way all the way to the paved road. And it was about that time that All Night Long commenced to barking and whining like something was wrong. Now, he was back there in the bed of the truck where he always was, and I figured he'd get used to all them hailstones dogs usually do, but he just kept carrying on. Now, I don't know what it was, but something spiritual happened inside of me. I started feeling sorry for that there dog. So I pulled into this here filling station down there in the country, and I invited All Night Long to join me up there in the cab of my truck, which is something, by the way, we don't generally do where I come from. Now, I don't know if you ever smelled a wet hunting dog in close quarters before, but it ain't something I generally recommend, especially when it's raining and all and you can't roll the window down. But you know something? That dog won't upset no more. And I'm saying to myself, you did a beautiful thing. Now, I was starting to feel kind of good about myself. So I wiped all that old tobacco out of my mouth and I put in a fresh green plug. I was ready to head on down the road. So I started turning stuff on. I turned on the ignition, the windshield wipers, I turned on the defrost. And then I thought maybe All Night Long might appreciate a little music. So I turned on the radio too. I wasn't intending to turn nothing else on, but I reckon I turned on that dog too, because next thing I know, All Night Long leans over and takes that stinking wet foot-long hound dog tongue and licks me right across my face, on my lips and everything. Friends, I ain't never had a woman do that. I got so fluttered, I swallowed my tobacco. One second it was here, next thing I know, it was there. My poor stomach turned into a Ferris wheel and a roller coaster all in one. I jumped out of that truck and I ran lickety-split for that filling station bathroom. I'm in there leaning over the sink just waiting for nature to do its thing. And being the Boy Scout that I am, be prepared and all, I'm dropping my pants to the floor, because you never know which way a plug of green tobacco is going to go. Early on, it's making motions in this direction, and I'm preparing for that. But then it turns itself all the way around and heads the other way. And I'm just thinking, will you please hurry up and commit? So there I am leaning over that sink and praying to God for relief, when all of a sudden my prayer gets answered in the most strangest way. I heard that bathroom door open behind me, and there's a deputy sheriff staring me straight in the face. Well, not face, but staring at me nevertheless. And that ain't all. He's got a gun. Well, it ain't a real gun. It's just a little pistol, but he's poking it in my belly, which just happens to be the same belly that's doing that roller coaster Ferris wheel thing. And he says to me, "What you doing in here, boy?" Wait, it turns out in my haste to make it to that bathroom before I throwed up, I had run smack dab into the ladies' restroom. And that deputy sheriff must have had a stakeout because he was in there lickety-split. Now, the problem was I couldn't talk because I was choking on my tobacco. And because I didn't say nothing, he thought I was being smart. So he went back to poking me in the belly with that there gun. Well, it wasn't a gun. It was just a pistol. But nevertheless, he's poking and poking. And that was when that green tobacco, it finally made up its mind what it was going to do. Now, I had heard of projectile retardation, but I had never seen it personal. I didn't just vomit on that officer of the law. I projectile vomited on that officer of the law. I hit him hard with a plug of green tobacco right in the eyeball. Now, most of you probably know what I'm talking about, but if there's somebody out there that ain't ever been hit before in the eyeball with a plug of green tobacco, it's a devilish situation. First, there's the impact of the wad itself. It just plain hurts. In North Carolina, where that happens rather often, we call that phase one tobacco trauma. But then there's phase two, and that's when the chemicals in that there tobacco start interdigitating with the chemicals in your eyeball. And that's a whole different kind of hurt. Well, phase one knocked that deputy over backwards. And when he hit that floor, I reckon he did what anybody might do in that situation. He shot himself a hole right through his foot. And it might have all been over then and there. But then phase two. Phase two kicked in, and his gun, and he's rolling on the floor and screaming about how his eyeball is burning off, and his gun starts going off again, and he shot himself a hole through his other foot. So there I am, my pants are down around my feet, and I'm jumping and dodging them bullets again, and fortunately, I had the presence of mind, which I'm rather proud of, to reach down and take that gun away from that poor officer so he wouldn't hurt himself no more. But unfortunately for me, it was at that very moment that Deputy Williams walks in the door, and what he sees, it don't make me look too good. There I am, full moon, gun in hand. Well, it's not a real gun, it's just a pistol, but legally speaking, it's against the law. And his partner is on the floor with two bullet holes in his body, and he's complaining about my unauthorized use of chemical weapons. "Blinding my eyeballs is bad enough," he says, "but sir, you have rent my brand new Tony Lama boots." When he brought up the boots, I knowed I was in a heap of trouble. They could have charged me with 3 counts of assaulting an officer of the law, once with my tobacco and twice with his gun, well, his pistol. But instead, they went for a more serious crime: felonious use of a bathroom. The jury found me guilty, of course, because I was. And the judge asked, did I have anything to say? Well, I told her my story about swallowing my plug of green tobacco and how all that bad stuff wouldn't happen if I hadn't swallowed that plug of green tobacco. And you know what? Tears came in her eyes. She said she had done that very thing just that morning. And she had empathy, whatever that was. And she said she was going to exonerate me. I said, "Oh, please, judge, please don't exonerate me. Here in North Carolina, that's lethal injection. I'm scared to death of needles." The judge said, "Whoa, mule, I said exonerated, not executed." And then that sweet lady of a judge proceeded to explain to me how, in legal terms, there was actually two words that start exactly the same way. But if you follow them all the way to the end, they wind up meaning just the opposite of each other. Who knew? So that whole thing really would have been over then and there. But then in comes Deputy Williams one more time. He went up there and he took the stand and he testified that he saw me committing a crime there in the cab of my truck before I even went into that bathroom. He said I was French kissing with a hound dog. Long story short, felony, 5 years. But you know something, friends? It ain't all bad. The other day I saw the prison warden. I said, sir, if I could make 2 years good behavior, could I have myself one of them there conjugal visits? He looked at me and he said, you mean all night long? I thought I died and went to heaven. That's my story.
I love it. You mean all night long? I thought I died and go to heaven. I love it. Dean, you heard the story before. What are your impressions?
So,
I mean, what do you love about it? I mean, you know, it's really true for both of you.
I started counting all the spiritual experiences that were going on in there. So there was the spiritual experience of letting the dog into the cab. And then there was the devilish spiritual experience of getting tobacco in the eye. And then the chagrin of Tony Lama boots being damaged. And then the relief of being exonerated. And then, of course, thanking heaven for a conjugal visit with all night long. So,
right.
It was fun just to kind of hear the story and realize all these little spiritual things being made. So,
now, did you hear those spiritual references the first time you heard it, or?
No. So, and that's why it's kind of cool to hear a story more than once. And I'm not sure when you were a kid, I used to listen to a lot of comedy albums, and it wasn't just one time through. You listened to them over and over again.
Right.
Because there was all this kind of stuff that you didn't hear the first time because you're maybe laughing at something and then you go on. So,
right. No, you're absolutely right. And I hear you. And I, with my own students, I tell them when they ask me sometimes, gee, how come I like the story the second time? I tell them it's the same reason why you love your favorite movie a second time or third time or fourth time. You know, one of my favorite movies is Godfather, right? Isn't it for most people? And I must have seen it 100 times, no kidding. And every time I see it, I love it. And I ask myself why. I see something different all the time. I know the dialogue, I go through it. But regardless of how minute it might be, it gives it a more refreshing perspective. But yeah, Warren's story with all that spirituality, I love it. I love that. And, you know, obviously it's a stereotype, but to have any story with that kind of wit and spirituality with a Southern accent carries with it entirely different credibility. You know, it just does. It sounds like a stereotype, but it is so true. Warren, you know, tell us how you constructed the story. In other words, how did you decide on the facts versus, you know, those fanciful journeys that you merged together? In other words, you know, truth and lie. How do you decide what to put in there?
Well, this was intended to be a funny story, of course, but it started in a very serious place. North Carolina really did pass a bathroom bill back in 2016. And I was so embarrassed that my home state did that. It was an attempt to limit the freedoms of transgender individuals. And it was so offensive to me in terms of just the implications for human rights and also for the mental health, particularly of younger transgender individuals. And just an insult to their dignity, I thought. But there was another piece of that legislation, which was, to me, just a ludicrous aspect of how would you enforce such a law? And I kept trying to imagine, what's the state going to do? Are they going to hire bathroom inspectors to stand outside the bathrooms and or inside? And, are they going to inspect body parts to see if they match, with what's on the door? I mean, it kind of got ludicrous. And I guess one thing led to another. And so I tried to imagine just some normal guy who accidentally goes in the wrong bathroom, which we have all done, especially in moments of urgency, and it could happen to anybody. And I guess it just went from there.
Wow. That is so fascinating. You, your story is fun, but offering that little assessment, it really is some serious stuff there. There really is some serious stuff. It never really occurred to me. I knew a little bit about that because you told me about it, but you know, the bathroom bill, we think that's funny, but it's not. Dean, what now you made reference to this a few minutes ago, but what is your strategy for, stretching the truth into a tall tale? For example, we know what an apocryphal story is. We know that George Washington never chopped out a cherry tree. I'm sorry if I'm busting anybody's balloon out there, but he really didn't. But if he had, he'd walk up to his father and say, "Pa, I cannot tell a lie. I chopped down that cherry tree with my little hatchet," because it says something about his character. It's a story about his honesty, obviously. And I think that some of these lies fall under that category. They're not quite an apocryphal story, but they're getting close. Yours was a little bit, I think. But how do you stretch it into a tall tale?
Well, my first thought about George Washington, it sounds like he was running for election, but anyway. a lot of stories that, and I kind of call them under the family story category, are things that have happened. Mm-hmm. And then you're just like, okay, well, that happened. And maybe something else happened to somebody else. Mm-hmm. And so you can put things together, right? So, and then once you've got them together, and then you start saying, well, what else could have happened? And then who else could have been there? Maybe it's even a fictitious person. And then you just keep kind of adding these layers to it. And then I always try to push, I typically push for things that are funny. Like there's other folks in our guild that are much more historical and push towards history and pieces that aren't necessarily known. So they're a lot more serious, right? A little bit parallels to what Warren was talking about. I tend to go for the humor.
Well, let's try a very short exercise. And I want our listeners to kind of play around, at least to themselves. Many years ago, I had Sheila Starks Phillips, both of you know her, really a great storyteller here in the state. And I asked her the same question because she's a great liar, if you will. And she said, well, here's how you lie. I said, I'm going to give you a term and you tell me the opposite of what that term really means. So, for example, say to me, Amarillo, because she's from Amarillo. I said, okay, Amarillo. And she says, oh, what a beautiful set of greenery and hills, the kind of fall foliage that you wouldn't find anywhere. Of course, but you get there and it was, and I got the idea. So you take a concept or an idea and you somehow persuasively use the word and gesture that is the opposite of what it is. Now that doesn't sound very profound, but it really is difficult to do that. So for example, okay, Dean, if I said to you, your favorite subject in school, what would you do with that to create a lie, for example?
So my favorite subject in school was chemistry. Mm-hmm. And that's because the chemistry teacher was a fanatic about the Beatles. And so I remember that him coming into class when A Magical Mystery Tour came out, mm-hmm. and he talked about listening to it on headphones and having the bus drive through his head.
Right.
And so what attracted me to that particular teacher and to pay a lot more attention to him in class was this kind of off character, real person as a teacher.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Very good. You know, now if you ask me, what was your favorite subject? I would say, I loved biology, because even in the ninth grade, I knew that I really wanted to be a heart surgeon, even though obviously I never came close. I'm a doctor, but not that kind. But I was so desperate to become a doctor that I liked biology, but I really wasn't very good at it. So I tried to cheat because I had to get really great grades if I wanted to go to a good college and ultimately medical school. And in one biology semester, the teacher gave us an insect collection. We had to go out and get an insect collection. Now, I've got asthma. I'm not going to go out in the middle of the woods and catch an insect. So armed with my Primatene Mist, I went out and I tried to do that, but I failed. So I saved my allowance money and I went to a hobby store and I bought an insect collection. I knew this would be a good one because I looked on the back and it said Yale, right? So I figured this has got to be a great collection. I'm going to get an A. This will be my way of building up my GPA and going to med school one day. Well, I handed it in to my science teacher, Mr. Johns. He gets it back to us the following week. I get a C on it. Said, a C? What, is he kidding me? So I went up to him and I said, Mr. Johns, why did you give me a C? And he said, look, Hank, you and I both know you didn't do this. I said, okay, I didn't do it. But he says, but listen, you tried and I don't want to fail you, but don't ever do that again. I said, but how can you give me a C? This was made at Yale University. And he says, that's Yale Hobby Shop. So I learned very quickly that cheating just doesn't pay. Okay. Now that's all a fib, right? But the idea is that, you know, you take your favorite subject, think about what you really hated, make it somehow meaningful, right? Warren, how about your dog? You have a dog, right?
Okay. Yeah.
Play with your dog. Tell us something about your dog. Make it into a lie.
Oh, okay. Well, we, early on, our dog had was one of these dogs that sort of had a failure to thrive. Mm-hmm. She was the runt of the litter. And we did a lot of research at some of the best, you know, YouTube sites you could find. Mm-hmm. And there was this 8-year-old boy from, I think he was from Arkansas, and he had a YouTube video about a special formula you could feed your dog that would make your dog strong, sort of like the Charles Atlas of dogs. Mm-hmm. You know, he sort of guaranteed that would work. And it was an interesting mixture of dog food and water. And this, I think the special additive, you'd put a little bit of cat food in there and just a touch of molasses, and then yeast would just set it all to going. And if you feed that to your dog won't be the runt anymore. They said, you know, that was what the science said.
It's totally good sense. Yes.
Yeah. And so would you believe that dog now is 29 years old? Mm. She runs 5 miles every day.
Wow.
And she's not in the Guinness Book of World Records, but she does have a pint of Guinness every night when she gets home from her workout. And she's very stout. I mean, she's all muscle, and nothing ails her at all.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just a stout dog with nothing ails her.
Right. I love it. Thank you. Thank you guys for playing around. I want listeners to know this was not planned on a cigar, right? You're my witnesses. But you see, I want our listeners to know that this isn't just how you create a lie. It really how you create a story. But I want our listeners to know that we've been doing this all of our lives. You know, the kiss is a little longer. I broke up with that guy and my heart was just so destroyed. In the meantime, why are you dating somebody the next day? How hurt can you possibly be? Kiss was a little longer. The cricket jumped a little higher. You know, I was near death when I had a cold last week. You know, we do what we can to amplify a story. Every storyteller knows that. And we amplify our story for the same reason we try to have a really good speaker system for music, because we heighten that level of awareness. So I want our listeners to know that if they ever think They can't tell a story, whether it's a true or a lie, they're wrong. Now, what do you say to somebody who says, Dean, Warren, I get it. I really would like to tell stories, but I really don't have anything interesting to tell. What do you say to him? Warren, what would you say to him?
I'm going to let Dean go first because I think he's got something good to say here.
Well, I would say that when they're together with their relatives, Thanksgiving or something, I bet there is a huge amount of trading of stories. I mean, just a matter of getting together with friends and catching up on all the things that you've done since the last time you saw them. Yeah. And that's the interpersonal stuff. If we're talking about performance storytelling, that is something that you have to practice. That's the advantage of being involved in a guild to do that. When I started storytelling, it was about 15 years ago, through a long series of what makes a whole story. It was just the simple fairy tales. You know, I mean, we all know the Three Little Pigs. We know Little Red Riding Hood. I mean, you know, you can just learn to stand in front of a group and tell that story. I think another thing is, how good are you at telling a joke?
Right. I love that.
A little story joke and have a punchline, and the more groans you get at the end, you know you've got a good joke going.
Right.
Then that's those initial things. Once
you I love that.
Yeah. Kind of physicality and expression kind of going, then you start maybe building those personal stories that you have into something that is a little bit more interesting for a audience to listen to.
I love that. Okay, let me try that. Let me try that. Okay. You know, there was a story about these two kids who just tried to get answers to really good questions, but they weren't getting any answers, especially from their parents. Like little five-year-old Bobby walks up to Mommy and says, Mommy, how old are you? And Mommy says, Mommies don't like to answer those kind of questions. Okay, Bobby continues, but how much do you weigh? Well, Mommies don't like to answer those kind of questions either. Okay, well, then how come you and Daddy got a divorce? Well, that's a really good question, Mommy conceives, but you're just too young to understand. But one day I'll let you know. Well, Bobby's really frustrated. He's asking good questions. He's not getting answers. So he goes to his best friend, Tommy, another five-year-old, and says, Tommy, do you have a hard time getting information from your mom? Oh, yeah, Tommy says, but you know what? I know how to get information from anybody. My dad taught me. He's a police officer. And he says that whenever you want information, just get the person's driver's license. That's all you need. And you'll know it all. Well, Tommy believes him. They believe each other. Bobby believes Tommy. The next morning, he gets up real early and he gets in a mom's purse and he takes out her driver's license and he memorizes it cold. And he walks up to Mom with great confidence and says, Mom, I know how old you are. Now, I told you I wasn't going to give you that information. Mommies don't give that information. Well, you don't have to. You're 32. Well, I don't know how you figured that out, but you're right. And I know how much you weigh. Well, now I told you Mommies don't like to give you that kind of information either. You don't have to. You weigh 118 LBSs. Well, that's kind of close. And Bobby continues, I know why you and Daddy got a divorce. Now, Bobby, I told you that's a good question, a real good question, but I'm not giving you that answer because you're much too young. Well, I know why you and Daddy got a divorce. And why do you think we got a divorce, Bobby? It's because you got an F in sex. So, you know, the idea is that, you know, you tell this story about the idea of, hey, are you asking any questions, getting any answers? I've done better. It's all in the delivery. But yeah, but that's what you mean, right? A story joke, a story joke.
Yes.
Warren, what do you tell somebody? We got another couple of minutes left. What do you tell somebody?
Well, I guess I would sort of reflect on how natural storytelling is. It's the thing that our ancestors have done ever since the beginning of time, sitting around, eating a meal, sitting around a fire. In my case, childhood, sitting on the porch, sitting in front of the fireplace, or working, you know, shelling butter beans, and somebody just tells a story or just an anecdote, and then somebody else says, oh, I remember one time when I was doing that. And then everybody's got a story about that topic. And that's just the most natural thing in the world to do. So when somebody says they don't have a story, they must not have been doing that. They must have been watching too much TV or something.
Right.
Because when people get together, what else is there to do but to tell stories?
Yeah. Thank you guys for this, because, you know, tonight's show, obviously, we wanted to have some fun listening to your lies. And there were whoppers. But I also want, you know, our listeners to know that this kind of a show, So What's Your Story, is successful not just because we tell stories. It's because we're encouraged to tell stories. And we want listeners to know that they really are natural storytellers. And listening to a story really is a very unselfish act. Dean, what do you think?
I just want to add one little thing that we say around our guild, and that's that all stories are true. Some of them actually happened.
That's right. There you go. I love it. And Mark Twain, you know the old line, never let a good story get in the way of the truth, right? Never let the truth get in the way of a good story. Dean Keith and Warren Holloman, thank you so much for your tall, tall tales, complete with humor, wit, wisdom, all laced with the soul of the consummate storytellers, which you both are. And thanks also for helping us raise a few bucks to boot, I hope. Which reminds me, it only takes 90.1 seconds, folks, to call 713-526-5738. Jam KPFT with your pledge, which we would so greatly appreciate it. Don't you dare move, because Charles Hightower's R&B Gold is up next with a cool mix of soul. Please make Houston's community station, KPFT 90.1, a part of every day. Join us every Thursday at 5 p.m. for So What's Your Story? And you keep loving a great story, and we're going to keep bringing them to you. On behalf of the So What's Your Story team, we never want you to forget that even if a story doesn't necessarily end happily, it doesn't mean you can't live happily ever after. We want everybody to feel all right, feeling all right. Hope so. Well, here's Rare Earth to sing that song. My show, my version. Peace.
Seems I've got to have a change of scene.
If you are an animal lover, then BARC, the City of Houston's Animal Shelter and Adoption Center, would love to get to know you better for two reasons. First, for fostering, as fostering changes lives. And there's many different options within fostering, but with every kind of fostering, the goal is the same, to help every foster animal become adoptable and to find a forever home. To learn more about the life-saving act of fostering, shoot an email to barkfoster@houstontx.gov. The second thing to know about BARC is the large number of adorable animals looking for their forever homes. BARC's Adoption Center is open from noon to 5 p.m. Tuesdays through Sunday and is located at 3300 Carr Street, which is near 59 and Collinsworth. So if adoption or fostering works for your household lifestyle, please seek out more information at houstonbark.com.
On the next Alternative Radio, tune in for Jennifer Hendricks on Roe v. Wade and the Supreme Court. That's Alternative Radio, Friday mornings at 9, right here on KPFT 90.1 FM, Houston.
90.1, Houston's community station.
You're listening to